Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 239. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me in sunny Santa Monica is John Romanello. John, what's up?
How are you doing? 239 episodes, man. That is crazy. That is, congrats.
Yeah, we've been kind of, it's been a little bit slower lately because of the craziness at the gym, but we still try to keep it going.
Well, that's fantastic. I am very excited to be on episode 239. Thank you for having me and putting up with me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I mean, we were kind of talking a little bit off the air about Spider-Man. I mean, we'll preface this by saying that superhero workout, and yep. You know, that's something that you're known for, and mm-hmm. It was, you know, you had tons of great stuff in there, you know, talking about the superheroes as well. So I would call you an expert on the superheroes. And you did not like the most recent superhero movie being Spider-Man.
No, and that's really upsetting. So for anyone else who does not know, I am a huge superhero geek. Like I've been reading comics since I could read, and you know, like I have pictures of me when I was like 4 years old dressed up as Superman, and so it's been like a big part of my life. You know, like from the time I was able to process the idea mm-hmm. of what superheroes were, I wanted to be one. And then, you know, in the past like 10 or 12 years, when superhero movies started becoming popular, it's great for me because I really think that it's kind of our you know, modern American mythology, and it's really nice to see it translated in that medium. And I think that generally it does a good job. But I think that, you know, the source material is so rich and so complex and so wonderful that when they make a bad superhero movie, it just like offends me on so many levels because there's so many good ways to do it. Mm-hmm. And for example, the new Spider-Man was absolutely terrible for so many reasons. I just think it suffered from bad writing and bad editing. And there's not a lot that, you know, you can do there to make a movie good if it's just suffers from those issues. So, you know, it's, you know, they called it the amazing Spider-Man. I would call it like the mediocre Spider-Man. Like it's the, you know, if you got nothing to do on a Friday night, I guess you can go see it, Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Do you really like want to get into the why I hated it? Like I'll do that. I'll analyze this movie right now for you.
No, I'll just be straightforward. John sent me an email with some bullet points, and he had some very to be honest, there were good points.
Okay, so here's the main thing. what I think about superheroes is that they are, you know, they sort of like fall in line with the old quote that, you know, some men are born great, some men become great, and some men have greatness thrusted upon them. What I've really always liked about the superhero mythology is that, speaking generally, people become superheroes in reaction to something else, and it's usually through no fault of their own. In this, I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but you know, the original mythology of Spider-Man is that he goes to this science exhibit and he randomly gets bit by a spider through no fault of his own. He just happens to be there because he is interested in science. And so he becomes Spider-Man sort of as the result of a very positive trait in that he like is interested in something knowledgeable. Whereas in this one, he's like snooping around Oscorp. He like he breaks into the room where the spiders are and he gets bit. And as soon as you have your hero like becoming a superhero as a result of a character flaw and breaking and entering, like I think that like really changes the idea, the mythos a little bit. It becomes, you know, much more of like the origin story of like a supervillain, someone who is like questing after something and it goes awry, rather than someone who just has like characteristics of greatness brought out by an event, you know. And then, you know, add to that the fact that like Peter Parker does not evolve as a character at any point. I mean, he's the same like snarky little brat at the end as at the beginning. And so I could go on all day, but I'll just end with this. Andrew Garfield, great actor, loved him in The Social Network. Not big enough for the role. And I hate saying that. I do, because you have all these jackasses on the T Nation message boards and all these other places I write who get like pissed off because, like, you know, Thor isn't 500 pounds or whatever. And like, generally I'm very accepting of the fact that actors should be actors first. You know, you should hire a great actor to play a great role, and then he should look, you know, like looking the part is secondary. But with Andrew Garfield, I mean, like the kid just – he could have eaten something. He could have lifted a weight. He could have done anything. I mean, Toby fucking Maguire got shredded for the original Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So like Andrew Garfield, what is your problem? Like that just bothered me. It was just like too skinny, too much.
Toby Maguire spawned, you know, tens of thousands of people on forums asking what his workout was.
So exactly. And
it's
no
not
one
happening with Garfield.
Right. And so, you know, obviously take that with a grain of salt. Like, that's annoying to me because it's devastating to my marketing plan for my superhero products. But I just, as a comic book hero, a comic book fan, you know, like wanting to look like the heroes is sort of a big part of the draw for me. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, they sort of did a disservice there. I think that was one of many missteps.
Yeah, I think he was kind of a little too emo for me.
Yeah, so. He was very, very Edward Cullen.
Yeah. All right, so now that we got that out of the way, there is one little thing that I have to bring up since we have not talked since this transpired, and that was the acquisition of star quarterback Tim Tebow.
Oh, Jesus, why did you do this?
I had to bring it up because, you know, training camp starts in like a week.
Yeah, this is a trap interview. I didn't realize that.
I didn't realize that.
You
need to defend your boy Tebow now.
Okay. Oh, my. All right. Well, if you're a Tebow fan and you are now a Jets fan, welcome to the fold. Okay, so the problem with the Jets, I think, was that Mark Sanchez is generally an underperforming quarterback. I think he has it in him maybe to be the man who we want him to be, the quarterback we want him to be, but he certainly didn't show that. And the response to a year of regression with a bad quarterback was to hire another bad quarterback. Like, that to me doesn't make any sense. Tim Tebow is no doubt a winner. He certainly has a lot of heart. But I think that if you know, you're obviously a Patriots fan. If you look at the Broncos Patriots game last year, like having a good quarterback is going to, like, a guy who does have heart and is incredibly skilled is going to completely outweigh and decimate a team that is relying on a guy who just has heart. Mm-hmm. You know, like Tom Brady put on a quarterbacking masterclass and you know, they trounced the Broncos. And by the way, what I love about Bill Belichick and Brady, you're up like 47-10 in the fourth quarter and they don't pull their starter. What is that?
Yeah. Belichick's a dick, man.
He is a dick. That is awesome. It just like pedaled to the floor the whole time. So yeah, my general feeling on Tebow is that it creates a really, really shitty situation for the Jets and for Sanchez in particular, because you have all these people who love Tebow for reasons outside of his ability to play quarterback. And, you know, if Sanchez has a bad game or throws an interception, you're going to have people calling for his head and chanting Tebow. And, you know, I want the Jets to win, and I would prefer to have the quarterback who gives us the best chance. But I don't believe that's Tebow, unfortunately. So that's it. So I'm very sad about it. It's not going to be a good year.
Well, I mean, you still got arguably, you know, one of the best defenses in the league.
Sure, yeah, and that's really great for keeping other people from scoring points, but sure, we need to be able to score some too.
Yeah, no, that's true, and we'll see. It'll be an exciting season, and biggest disappointment is that Hard Knocks is not going back to the Jets again this year, because I think that would be an interesting locker room with the two of them in there.
Yeah, I certainly think it would be. You know, again, I have some friends inside that organization. People speak really highly of their chemistry, and I hope that works. And to his credit, Tebow absolutely does seem to be willing to, you know, to work in any capacity and take on any role. And I love that. And, you know, hopefully Sanchez will step up with like a little bit of pressure behind him. But, you know, I'm a long suffering Jets fan. It's been years. You know, I fell in love with the Jets instead of being a Giants fan because of Wayne Corbett when I was like 13, and I've regretted it ever since. It's like,
he's nasty.
Yeah, he was incredible. But being a Jets fan, this is the best way I can explain it, and I hope this analogy doesn't offend anyone. Being a Jets fan is like being in an abusive relationship where you just keep going back and you keep making excuses, and somehow I feel like it's my fault and maybe one day they'll change and I should just like become a Giants fan because there's someone better who will treat me right. And I see it, and the Giants want me, but like I can't do it because I'm just like used to emotional abuse. And like that is exactly what it feels like. So,
well, you're not a Mets fan, right?
No, I'm not. Okay. God, it would be terrible. So, yeah, I don't know. This is depressing. Can we talk about some fitness shit now?
Yeah, let's talk about some awesome fitness stuff. We got we actually got quite a few topics to go through. So one of the first questions that we got was from Chase. This is kind of, you know, a pretty good question. Are there certain characteristics you look for in clients that help you determine the amount of volume that you use with them? For example, figuring out what is going to work best with them between a 3-day full body workout setup versus an upper lower 4-day split, etc. How much, and also how much do their goals factor in?
Sure. Well, their goals are obviously huge. I mean, you know, like if I have a guy who's like a pure fat loss client, I might, you know, I wouldn't put him on like a body part split. That's just not, you know, congruous with his goals. The biggest two things that I look at are what they have been doing, you know, for the past 3 months leading up to when they start with me, and what they can do in terms of scheduling. You know, I personally love to really start people off. If they're like looking to gain muscle, I really like a nice upper lower split. But, you know, if their training schedule doesn't really allow that, I don't necessarily know that I would want, if someone can only train twice a week, I would probably not have them on a split like that, you know, because the volume is, it would have to be phenomenally high within that session to account for the decreased frequency. So, I you know, I might do, if someone can only train twice a week, we've really got to go with full body with maybe an emphasis on upper and lower. So much of what I do really is determined by the person's schedule, much more so than anything else. And if a person has a completely open schedule, if I, you know, I've been lucky enough recently actually to pick up a lot of young guys, you know, I have a couple clients like Josh and Ian who, if they're listening, you guys get a quick shout out because you're killing it. They're awesome because, you know, they're young guys, they're involved in fitness. They're either training people now or they want to be, you know, like high level trainers. And so, for them, I can really make adjustments based on what they can handle. And in that case, so much is dependent on then it's all based on their goal. If you have a guy who wants to recomp, I you know, I'm happy to go 4 days a week with an upper lower split and then one full body day. If you have a guy who's, you know, completely dedicated to mass, then I will go, you know, vertical push pull, hip dominant, horizontal push pull, quad dominant, and just be able to really, you know, pack on not only the volume, but also split things up in terms of frequency. So it's a great question, and I wish I can give you like sort of a more concise answer, but you know, because my clientele is so completely spread across different types of individuals, it's hard to say. But you know, again, the primary thing is their schedule, and in terms of the very first programming, what they've been doing leading up to that.
As that response is a, you know, 300-page programming book.
Yeah.
All right, let's head on to the next question. It seems that there's a lot of trends and commonalities when it comes to succeeding and reaching your goals for people looking to get leaner, stronger, or gain muscle. What have you seen with all your clients that you've worked with? Like, what are some of the common themes and things that you've seen across the board that have, you know, made your clients successful, I guess?
Well, that's a really interesting question. That's like a psychology mindset question.
Exactly.
I think that the biggest indicator of success is like when people are willing to stop thinking. You know, when people are willing to like really just turn their brains off and listen to their coach instead of like overthinking things, then that generally really allows for progress to happen. You know, you probably see this a lot. You know, because of the way the internet is, if you're doing any sort of online work, as I mentioned with two of my earlier clients, you know, I do seem to have trainers being what I would call overpresented in my client base. And, you know, these are people who obviously like they don't have a problem with motivation. They don't have a problem with dedication. They don't have a problem with time. And so like those things which really sort of derail your average general pop client don't affect them as much. Close to 20-30% of my, probably closer to 30% of my clients historically in my online program have been trainers. And that's certainly what I would call overpresented because, you know, maybe the next highest thing would be, you know, 5% of my clients might have been like teachers. Mm-hmm. But so 30% is huge. So I really am speaking about those clients in particular. And so the ability for them to just get out of their own head and listen, and if they ask questions, have it being from a place of, I would like to learn this and I want to understand why you're doing it this way, as opposed to, well, this is not how I do it, or not how Cressy says or Poliquin says or anyone else says. And so, like, coming from a place of, like, just really open-mindedness and a willingness to follow directions, as opposed to a sort of, like, pseudo-adversarial, you know, like, challenging place, I think that's huge. So the ability to just listen is huge. And that's really it. You know, that would be the biggest thing that I have seen with my clients. But again, I do work with a pretty specific population in that regard.
No, great point. We'll kind of head off that topic for a second and go into some books. In your Romans Rules post, you mentioned that you should not own a lot except for lots of books. So my question for you, I'm always buying tons of books. Like, yeah. What have you been reading recently, and what's been piquing your interest?
So, you know, at any given point, like, I have a couple of different categories that I like to read. Obviously, you know, in the world that we're in, where everyone is sort of like, you know, their own little fitness entrepreneur, we all recommend like self-development and business type books. So I recently reread a book called The Way of the Superior Man by David Data. And it's really interesting because how to be successful in like life and business and with women. And it takes a completely like different approach. It's not, you know, with the stuff with women, it's not like the pickup artist stuff. It's about how to, like really just like own yourself in terms of, you know, your masculinity and like what you want and how, just really, really becoming sort of like the best version of yourself is the single most important way to like attract someone or be able to give yourself to someone in a relationship that can be successful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those concepts apply to business and to life and to spirituality. And it was David Data's book was the first that I've really experienced that. So that's the kind of book where I wouldn't say it was life-changing for me, simply because like that's always been my philosophy, or at least for the last 5 or 6 years. But I would say that that's a book that if you young guys out there are listening, you should really read, because if I had had it when I was 21 or 22, I feel like it would have been a great book to get my head right. Mm-hmm. And help me avoid some shit that I went through in terms of both women and like being too hard to figure out my life or whatever else. And while those struggles were important and shaped me, I really think that, you know, maybe I could have learned those lessons without, you know, getting fucked around so much. So that book is really, really great. So it's The Way of the Superior Man by David Data. And, you know, I want to thank Craig Ballantyne for that recommendation. He sent that to me.
Very cool.
I am currently reading, I'm get ready to laugh. Are you ready for this? I just finished the first 50 Shades book. I just finished 50 Shades of Grey.
Is that for like conversation? You know,
that's the thing. But with me, like anytime a book makes a lot of noise, I feel like I want to, you know, anytime like something,
you gotta check it out.
Exactly. Anytime like something like storms into the zeitgeist and enters pop culture in such an aggressive way, I want to know what it's all about. And that's the reason that I read Twilight. It's the reason that I read, A Million Little Pieces, and you know, that I read Eat, Pray, Love and all those books. Like, I just want to know, what is it about this book that is, you know, capturing the imagination. And actually, something interesting about 50 Shades of Grey, seven people completely independently of one another told me that the main character of Christian Grey reminded them very strongly of me. Five of these seven were women, two were guys. And so I was like, well, now I got to read it. There are similarities. I can see them. It's very interesting that people would draw those conclusions. I don't think that unless they had pointed them out, I would see those things. But I guess that says a lot about like the judgments people make, which is fun. So I'm reading that. I don't recommend it. You do not have to read it. I am going to read all three and tear them apart in my blog, just like I did with Twilight. So I'll save you the time there. What else have been? John Goodman's Ignite the Fire. You probably know John from the Personal Training Development Center.
Yeah.
Yeah, so John's great. So I really liked his book, Ignite the Fire, which is a book that when I was running a personal training business as my sole source of income would have saved me a ton of time and made me a ton more money, which I think would have been very nice for me at that point in my life when I was much younger. So those are the three big ones I've read recently. And anything else? I think this – I'm on a Neil Gaiman kick right now for those who don't know Neil Gaiman. Yeah, Neil – I love Neil. And I recommended him recently, and so I just picked up American Gods for the first time in a couple of years. I'm really enjoying it.
Awesome.
So that's it.
I ordered some more books. All right, thank you. So that was more of a selfish question. So
yeah, I'm happy to help.
All right. And again, kind of going back, again, if people haven't checked out this blog post, you got a ton of, comments and responses from that, the Romans Rules post.
That's the most popular blog post I've ever written in terms of virality and just response in such a short period of time. It got, it's gotten over 500 likes, but it worked its way into the top 10 most viewed pages on my website in 6 days. And so, I've had a site for 3 years. So I have pages that, obviously the home page is the most viewed, but that's been there for forever. That's really interesting.
Yeah, people haven't checked it out, it's just go to romanfitnesssystems.com/blog, and it's like the third post down. But I think the biggest thing, that I liked about it is you're just honest.
Yeah.
You didn't
I certainly didn't pull any punches.
No. I think it's like a must read for every guy out there, and even for the women out there. Like, there's tons of stuff in here that you can take home, and some great take home points. And it's just this is why I've been in a big biography kick right now, because obviously you can learn so much from people that have already lived 80 years, so we don't repeat our mistakes. That's what we go to history class for. But the there's tons of stuff that I took from it, and I really think people should head over there. And anyways, you mentioned in the post that train your forearms, and I think grip training is super important in any kind of program, not to mention just in the athletes, but even for the older population, it's a very functional thing. I mean, it's a bad word to use, but functional thing for everyday life. So my question for you is, how do you program it do you just program in like specific grip work, or is it just maybe like an extra set of chin-ups and that's the grip work for that day?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things. I think grip work is hugely important. It's just, if your grip starts to fade, you don't realize how bad your life can get really quickly. I mean, just imagine not being able to hold a glass. Like, I have dropped a lot of glasses at bars, but that's because if I have one drink, I get drunk because I'm a lightweight. But I mean, I can't imagine dropping a glass in my house because I can't open it, or not being able to open a jar of pickles. I mean, all the things that make me a man, when a girl hands me something and I can fucking, tear it apart. That's important to me. But, there's also a lot to show that grip strength can help prevent arthritis. And I think that's really important, obviously. But, in terms of forearm training specifically, it doesn't have to be for your grips. I think it's really interesting that, guys are so interested in looking good, and they train all these muscles that get covered up all the time. But your forearms, which are exposed for probably 3/4 of the year, they get neglected. So I'm really big on, rotational work and obviously flexion and extension stuff. The way I program that into my client stuff is for real forearm training, honestly, we'll just go fat grips. Mm-hmm. We'll do extra sets with fat grips because it just saves time. If I have someone who's willing to work on it by themselves, and when we're not together or outside of their programming, that works too. And one other thing I will mention is that although I really do think grip is important, I don't train grip or I don't prioritize grip over other things. For example, I have no idea why people divide themselves into these camps, but there was this big move for the past couple of years where people are like, oh no, you should never use straps, you're going to miss out on benefits to your grip and your forearms and all the shit. Jason Ferrugia did a great post on this recently about using straps, and he's like, okay, well, you're prioritizing your forearms over your back in a bent over row or deadlift. Why would you want to sacrifice 20 to 30% more weight for the targeted muscle to simply hit like an ancillary muscle. So, you know, I think that if you can pull 315 without you know, any grip issues or whatever else, you know, for 10 reps, then do it. But if you find that the grip is the limiting factor, then absolutely throw some straps on and then just do some extra grip work later. You know, I don't think we should over prioritize it, and I don't think that we should under prioritize it, which is why that I have train your forearms as something completely separate. You know, it's just like, take some time, do this on like a Saturday or a Sunday, you know, spend 20 minutes like working on your forearms and your grip and just go from there. You know, I really like just like the Captain's a Crunch. You can do that shit when you're in the car, just squeeze those things and all of that stuff. I'm not a grip training expert. I mean, I will defer to, you know, all of those guys, but I think that they have a lot to offer. And I think that in general, there's really no downside to having a strong grip and muscular forearms. So.
Good point. Again, more of my curiosity than anything else. So I got to know. All right. So, when you start to see your clients' progress stall, what are the mm-hmm. first things that you look at as, you know, possible causes for that's, you know, the stalling?
Sure. So plateaus, obviously, you know, they're just part of what we do. How long have we been together and what have we been doing? If someone like hits a plateau after the second month, then that's actually not that big of a deal because, mm-hmm. you know, like chances are we just need to change something. It's probably, you know, first 2 months that you're training someone, you're really like getting to know their body and what they can do. And usually month two, I think it's generally as simple as, you know, trying to either pack the volume on or tone it down or make some changes to diet. You know, with a lot of my clients who aren't trainers, I find that when I put them on something like a carb cycling diet, the idea of macronutrient manipulation is so new to them and so unfamiliar that it takes them a little while to get it. And so right around month two, I might tweak the diet to make it a little bit more complicated and you know, adjust the way that they carb cycle. And that usually cleans things up. And of course, you know, I'm big on hormonal training. I mean, that's really like what I'm known for, and those are the types of programs that I have created over the years. And I think that if you look at where most people hit the plateau, you know, it's you've lost weight everywhere else, but you've got these quote unquote problem areas. Maybe you're storing a lot of fat in your love handles, or if you're a woman, maybe you're storing it in your lower body. And I think that like looking at that as sort of an independent factor and addressing it specifically as one really allows you to break through. And so, you know, it might be as simple as figuring out what is causing the estrogen imbalance. It might be as simple as, if you're a guy in particular, you know, getting on a little, you know, like a testosterone enhancing supplement or cutting beer out of your diet, which has, you know, a lot of hops in it. Obviously, it's one of the main ingredients. So it's got, but hops, people don't know this. They don't know this when they're drinking beer. Hops has like the second highest concentration of phytoestrogens in any food that we regularly consume, the first being soy. I mean, so it's just, you know, guys like want to go out and get smashed. I don't, you know, like do what you want, but, you know, drink some bourbon. I mean, beer isn't doing you any favors if you're growing boobs. So, but I mean, stuff like that. So it's looking at what it is. If you have an insulin issue, it might be like really adjusting the carbohydrates or throwing in some insulin maximizers, insulin sensitivity maximizers, you know, something as simple as cinnamon. So there's a lot of things there. So really we try and figure it out. If it's just a programming issue, then we can do that. But if it's hormonal, then, you know, we try to program around it. That's the main thing. It's just, you know, really making it happen. And I think that most people, if they've been training for a while, the plateau will be hormonal. Yep, that makes sense. Hello. Hello.
Sorry, you got me?
Yep, I got you. I was not able to hear.
That's my fault. In full disclosure, I'm muting my mic because my air conditioner's on. Oh, so okay. I'm trying to forgot to unmute my mic. So the last thing we're gonna kind of wrap up on with the question is kind of an overarching topic of maintaining and living a better life, and how you put it, understanding balance. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right. So I think that when you're very young and you first get into fitness, you get like really into it. I mean, you probably remember this. You know, how old are you now, Kevin? You're 29?
26.
26? Oh my God, you're a baby. Jeez. Okay. No. So you've been in the fitness game for a while. That's why I thought you were older. But I remember when I first got involved in fitness, and when I like first really got on and I went through my big transformation, and you know, I was like all part of T Nation for the first time ever and writing for them. You get like really wrapped up in that kind of stuff, and I think that's fine, you know. But like, I remember my diet and whether or not dietary compliance was going to be possible was like the single biggest factor in determining whether or not I would do something socially. You know, it's like, it's funny, you go out of your way to like get this body so that you could be attractive to women, but then you can't go out on a date anywhere because you know, you can't eat any food there. Mm-hmm. But I think that's important. I think that everyone goes through those moments where they're like really, really prioritizing their fitness. And it's not just fitness, you know, that happens when, you know, when you first like get online, and like, you know, there was probably a point for you where the FitCast was like the most important thing in your life. And for me right now, you know, I'm writing my first print book for HarperCollins, and I want it to be a bestseller. And it's like this dominant thing in my life. And I think that those moments are important. They're like your trial by fire. And if you can get through that and still be interested in that thing, then it shows that it's more than sort of a trend or a fad in your life. But I think that the real thing, the main thing, is to find some level of balance. It is to be able to, you know, think about going out to dinner with your family and just think about the what you'll get out of that versus what it's going to cost you in terms of, you know, your fitness. And it's really interesting that people, they do this not just with fitness, but a lot of people do it with money. And, you know, I constantly find myself telling people, you know, when I turn down opportunities, or, you know, for either like, you know, reality type shows, or when I turn down, you know, a book that I was asked to write for a big magazine company, or when I go out of my way to like spend money on things that aren't going to get me immediate benefit, what I always find myself telling people is that there are other currencies outside of cash. There are things that can enhance your life and detract from your life, regardless of the amount of wealth that flows in and out of your bank account. And getting to that point and understanding that took me a really long time. And it's a huge point that I really want to teach guys, because balance in your life is so important. You don't want to chase dollars for your entire life, or chase women for your entire life, or chase success for your entire life. You want to be able to enjoy those things once you have them. And you need to be able to have a fit body and a healthy body so that you can enjoy vacations more. You don't want to avoid vacations because you are going to get out of shape because you're going to an all-inclusive resort and you're going to eat pancakes. You know, that's the whole thing with balance. That's why everything that I've always done has had some sort of back door. You know, you're really strict for 6 days and you have a cheat day, or, you know, you lift really heavy, but then you also have this one deload day. You know, I just think that people, they focus too much on the thing itself and not the way the thing can enhance the rest of their lives. And again, that goes for focusing too much on money for the guys that do that, or the guys that are, you know, into the pickup artist stuff, and they focus too much on chasing women and they have no idea what to do once they have them, and so they just go after a different one. It's all about, you know, working your ass off to get something and then incorporating into your life in a way that not only fulfills you but allows you to add value to other people. And that's a huge concept, and a spoiler alert, that is a big part of what my first book will be about. And that comes out, and can't tell you that much about it, but it's really about it'll come out April 16th, 2013, and I promise we can do another interview as soon as I'm cleared to tell you more about it. But the big push for the book is to become the best version of yourself. And it's not in like a Tony Robbins way, if you're not into that. It's like, it's just really like being an awesome guy and just figuring out how to be a fucking awesome person so you could do fucking awesome things and lead a fucking awesome life and really help other people be fucking awesome. And that's what I'm really excited about right now. So yeah, that's what I think about balance. It's like thinking about all the different ways that you can use the things you've achieved to help you achieve more things, and never, you know, sitting back and getting comfortable.
Yeah, I think that's something I still battle with, is finding that balance. I mean, how long did it take for you to kind of like figure it out? And I mean, that, to be honest, I didn't know a ton about the book, but now I'm super intrigued to kind of see what that journey's like.
I mean, it's a process, you know. I would never say that I'm, you know, to use Maslow terminology, I don't think I'll ever truly be fully self-actualized. But sure. I think that the first step was, you know, really understanding that at some point you have to think things are just like done. You know, like at this point in my life, I'm 30 years old. I have deadlifted 660 pounds. I have, you know, gotten paid to look good with my shirt off as a fitness model. I have, you know, like my, I've also been very fast or very strong or very lean or very big. I've competed at bodybuilding. This is probably as far as I'm going to take it. So like, I just needed to like understand that part of my journey is done. You know, like I am never going to be probably any bigger than I am right now, nor do I really need to be. Mm-hmm. And once I realized that, like, I was able to stop wanting it so bad. You know, I'm currently dieting down for a photo shoot, and you know, I will try and stay very lean, but like, you're never going to be as young as you were when you were 23, you know, like getting shredded is never going to be as easy for me as it used to be. I am, you know, working my way back up. I'd like to crack 700 in the deadlift. And once that happens, that'll probably be it. You know, I have tons of respect for, you know, Jim Wendler and Dave Tate, who just pursue strength as their focus in life. But it's like, that doesn't instill me with passion. That doesn't drive me. And so like, I just had to figure out for myself that whatever I was doing in fitness, like I had reached the highest I was going to go in terms of those things. And then I started thinking about other things. And, you know, I don't think it's any real surprise to anyone that I, you know, had a fairly wild period in my life where I was like, my sole focus was going out and sleeping with a lot of girls. And whatever a lot means to you, I'm not going to give names or numbers, guys, relax. But, you know, I needed to go through that period to, you know, figure out that didn't make me happy, and then like really just like try and get to a place where I could be like, all right, well, now I want something substantial. I feel like I've developed enough and I have something to offer. And, you know, you start like looking for ways to create partnerships with someone instead of, you know, bad relationships like you have when you're a kid where you're either being dominated or you're domineering. And you know, with regard to business, it's really only been like the past year that I have figured out how to relax. I mean, when I first broke into the online stuff in 2009, I was up blogging until like 4 a.m. every single morning, you know, while I was still training 40 hours a week at a facility. And you know, it's like I was burnt out, and I did that for a while. You know, so like what I'm really coming to see is that like I'm achieving balance. Like I want to be super successful in business, and I want my book to be super successful in writing, so that I can, you know, pass that to other people. I don't necessarily need that for, you know, just for its own sake. Mm-hmm. You know, do you understand what I mean? Like allowing those things to like sort of augment one another.
Well, I got you. And it's yeah. Like I said, it's super interesting. You know, subject matter for a book, and I look forward to checking out some more. But to get down to business, superhero fat loss. Let's talk a little bit about that. And I'm gonna be straight up. Tell me, you know, what makes that different from the superhero workout?
Sure. Well, the really simple answer is let's just quantify it to make it easier.
Sure.
Superhero workout was probably like, I would say like 80%. Muscle building or maybe even 70% muscle building and like 25 to 30% fat loss, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas this is, it's a pure fat loss program. I mean, you know, maybe 90% fat loss and 10% muscle building. So it's just sort of like a sort of an evolution of it and a reevaluation of the goal and then a retooling of the theories behind the programming in a way that allows for that goal. So, you know, I always wanted to create a muscle building program and to have it out there for the masses. I never wanted to make it, you know, like 8 weeks to great guns or, whatever the other muscle building programs are. I'm not going to, you know, talk shit about anyone. A lot of them are very good, but they just always seemed so basic to me. And so what I did with the superhero workout was I was able to overlay something I was very passionate about on top of programming and writing programs for muscle building, which I always was also passionate about. And superhero fat loss, on the other hand, is, you know, I'm allowed to do that same thing, but for fat loss programming, I just am really, really into superheroes and comic books. So if I could write comic book workouts for the rest of my life or you know, workouts to help people survive zombie attacks, like I would rather do that than just create like boring fitness products and try to come up with a quote unquote hook that would get people to promote them and other people to buy them.
Fair enough. And, you know, again, I think people had tons of success with the superhero workout. And, yeah. I just really like how you kind of set up the workouts. They're not boring. And it does give people the ability out there to kind of like switch off their mind for a little bit, let someone else do the work with the programming, which I think is important. And, I think, this interview is going to be coming out the day that it's released. So if you guys are hearing this, you can go out and check it out. We'll throw like a link for it up in the blog. And, also you can obviously go to, Roman's website as well, to check it out. And, no Andrew Garfield, programming, right?
No. It's definitely more, I think the look that people are going to associate with it is, you know, sort of like Ryan Reynolds, kind of in Blade 3 or, you know, but I mean, you know, even the guys in the Avengers, they, you know, they're lean, like, obviously Hulk and Captain America are pretty buff, but they're pretty shredded. And, you know, the important thing to note is that this is co-written with Matt McGorry, who's another New York City trainer. Matt trains a lot of actors and celebrities. And, you know, I had one of my clients be the body model for, you know, for a video game superhero. So this is like actual stuff that gets used. So it's not just a hook. It's not just like a veneer laid on top of it. You know, there's some qualification here as well. So,
cool. All right. Well, I think that, will do it for us today. Again, everyone can, definitely check out the workout. Again, like I said, I'll have links for it on the blog, or you can go to, romanfitnesssystems.com. And what's the website for the program itself?
It is superherofatloss.net. We were unable to get .com, I regret to inform you. But if you are listening to this on the FitCast, do not type that URL in. Please do me a favor and click on Kevin's affiliate link so he gets paid. I would really love that. That would mean a lot to me.
Oh, thanks. Gonna get me back to Tokyo this year, man.
I just want everyone to be happy. You should, you know, I appreciate you having me, and you know, so if anyone's gonna make $5, it should be you.